This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Now we want to look at the water maintenance and infrastructure. If you want to be part of that conversation, you can always dial in on 0861-987-000. Randwater, the city's bulk water supplier, announced that it will be working on their raw water pipe, which supplies the Vereeniging water purification plant. Purification plant will be out of action, and of course, as of yesterday, from about 5 a.m., for a period of about 54 hours. And now we look at, you know, what this is all about, and whether or not we are seeing a lot of planned maintenance, or we are going, we are doing as we go along. We saw that press briefing led by the Minister of Water and Sanitation, Senzo Mchunu, yesterday, with the chairperson of the Randwater Board, as well as some personnel, really taking us through, you know, about the expansion, the demand, and all of these things. Professor Anthony Turton, professor at the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State, joins us on the line. A good morning to you, Prof.
Good morning to you and the listeners.
Thank you so much for making time. Just give us a sense of appreciation about, you know, the state of our water infrastructure in the country. Perhaps before we get into the specifics, you know, with the Randwater, a lot has been said about, you know, how we badly manage our leaks, and the Department of Water and Sanitation has tried to come up with all form of ideas to try and manage these. It seems a lot as if there is a lot of leakage in the infrastructure, whilst also on the other hand, there seems not to be enough, because some people are still without running water in their homes.
Yes, the management of water is an extremely complex issue. You know, the average person takes for granted when they open the tap that water comes out, but it's extraordinarily complex. So let me just try and unpack some of that complexity. The first level of complexity relates to the fact that there are many role players involved. So you mentioned now the Department of Water and Sanitation as a national government department. They're responsible for the major infrastructure, the water resource, the water in the rivers and dams. Mm. Then you get Randwater, which is a state-owned enterprise, but it's not the Department of Water Affairs. It's a completely different actor. They are obliged to take water out of the river, treat it, process it, and then sell it onto the different municipalities. Then, of course, you've got all the different municipalities in the country. In this case, that you and I experienced in Gauteng, there are multiple municipalities that are the end users of that water. Mm. So it's a complex value chain. But then, of course, all of that water that gets pumped up out of the Orange Vaal River system into Gauteng eventually comes back as wastewater, and most of that returns into the Limpopo River system. So all the water that we take out of the Orange and Vaal eventually ends up in the Limpopo as sewage. So it's a very complicated thing, and of a lot of the problems are felt at municipal level, and people are tend to point the finger of blame maybe at the wrong place.
And talking about, you know, putting blame at the wrong place, Prof, I wonder, this system of relying, as you said, Randwater, state-owned entity, not necessarily the department, there are various number of these water boards, Umgeni, Mhlathuze, and so on, big debates whether some should be amalgamated or not. Do you think these state-owned entities, or water boards as we would call them, are still the right way in terms of maintaining and, you know, looking after this water infrastructure, making sure that you and I receive some water on our taps?
Yeah, well, just to give you some insight, Rand Water Board, which is responsible for providing water across the entire Gauteng area, is older as an institution than South Africa is as a sovereign state. Mm. South Africa became a sovereign state in 1910, or with the Act of Union, but the Randwater was started just after the Boer War in 1903. So these are very old institutions with deep institutional memory. They've served us very well in the past. And yes, you know, we're living in times of trust deficit with government, and there's all sorts of corruption going on. But within that messy business, there's some good news stories. And the one good news story is that, in general, while attempts have been made to hijack the water boards for various corrupt purposes, they've mostly managed to withstand that that attempt at hijacking. Mm. And Rand Water is one of those. It's, you know, it is done pretty well. And it, there's another one that's also an important stakeholder, an entity called the TCTA, the Trans-Caledon Tunnel Authority.
Yes, yes.
They are an extremely important special purpose vehicle. Because they have resisted attempts by the former Nombula Mokanyane to hijack phase two of the Lesotho Highlands Water Project.
And it's a very complex project, because it's a project that runs between South Africa and Lesotho, which is very important as well for the availability of water supply.
Yes, but the point that I'm homing in on now is the fact that, say, you have the TCTA as a as a very robust institution that has managed to resist attempts at hijacking. So, in other words, I wouldn't be supportive of the idea of changing the water board structure. If anything, I would give them more teeth and give them more
independence as well.
Yeah.
And now, Prof, let's look at the situation here in Gauteng. I mean, a lot of residents were quite unhappy when they were told that there would be some maintenance on the raw water pipe, which would lead to reduced or no water supply for some people, especially in some parts of the metros within Gauteng. This maintenance, is it just routinal, or is it as a result? Prof, that it now has to disturb water supply? Is it as a result of work that was possibly left for too long undone, or this is normal in actual fact to have a reduction in water supply in order for some maintenance to be conducted?
Okay, for the listener to really appreciate that, I just have to explain some water management principles, if I can. One of the critical water management principles is what is known as assurance of supply. And the assurance of supply is a mathematically derived probability that water will be supplied at a given pressure, at a given place, at a given time, at a given quality, in a given volume, at a given price. So assurance of supply is a complex thing. It's mathematically computed to be a 98% of assurance supply. Mm. In other words, all of our systems are designed to be, certainly the bulk water systems are designed to be 98% compliant. So what that means is that you can have two breakdowns in 100 years or one breakdown in 50 years. That's what the design is about. If you start going to 100% compliance, the cost becomes just too prohibitive. So in order to mitigate against that 1 in 50 year breakdown, it is then incumbent upon the municipalities to build in their own municipal infrastructure a 48-hour buffer. And that 48-hour buffer is now what is being tested, because in most cases, the municipalities no longer have a 48-hour buffer. And in fact, a study that I was part of with some commercial clients a few years ago indicated that parts of Gauteng were down to less than half of that 48-hour buffer. So it's the inability of the municipalities to provide storage in their own systems at municipal level. This is the reason why there's a breakdown in pressure now, or in some cases, maybe even a complete loss of supply. But this is a design problem, not of Rand Water's making. If Rand Water does this maintenance as they should do correctly, we must applaud them for that. We must support them for that. Mm. But, we mustn't falsely apportion blame where it doesn't belong in this particular case.
Absolutely, Prof. But, of course, we do know that there are other issues. If you look at the southern parts of Gauteng, Mfuleni, and, water issues that have not been resolved, some people call on to this show and say, well, we've been without water for some months now, and we are not so sure what the problem is. So it's one thing to definitely support and make sure that the sustainability of the infrastructure is maintained at the requisite level, but it does seem as if there are certain problems, Prof, that we are dealing with, whether you are in Hammanskraal or Mfuleni, that we are not able to quite arrest and bring to finality and make sure that people have water in sustainable supply at the right quality level.
Yes, you're correct. Without any question of doubt, there's a breakdown in that. And I represent the South African Business Water Chamber, where we've been working very closely with OUTA. And we've been engaging at various levels, including Parliament and other parts of the government structures, calling for the establishment of an independent water regulator. And the reason why we need this independent water regulator is all of these breakdowns you're referring to have quite clearly indicated that the Department of Water and Sanitation, as the custodian of the national water resources, is unable to regulate its own activities because you can't be a player and referee at the same time. So the good news is through the interaction of the Business Water Chamber, we are now starting to move towards a direction where at least there's been some commitment made by government to the establishment of an independent water regulator, but also an even more important transition is taking place now where we're going to start seeing the emergence of independent water producers and independent energy producers or power producers simply because it's quite clearly demonstrated that these SOEs like Eskom, etc., are unable to meet the demands of South Africa. So, while it's a bad news story in the short term, there are elements of good news activity taking place within that spaghetti bolognese of otherwise unpleasant news.
You want to tantalize our taste buds this morning, Prof. My guest is Professor Anthony Turton. If you have a call to make to him, 0861-987-000 is the dial this morning. We're talking about water maintenance and infrastructure. Now, Prof, you've just mentioned something that's quite interesting. What would it look like when we talk about independent water producers? I mean, I have no doubt they would have to get some licenses in order for them to be able to tap into some water sources and then be able to reticulate into some municipalities. But what does that look like?
Okay, yeah, that's a great question. So for the last century or so, since 1903, Rand Water, in this case, has been taking water out of the Vaal River and producing it, cleaning it up and selling it into the Witwatersrand gold fields. That was the origin of Rand Water. But that has treated water as a stock, water as a finite resource. Mm. And you'll hear very often people talk about the fact that South Africa is the 30th driest country in the world and that we've run out of our water. Well, we've only run out of water if we consider water to be a stock. And a stock is a single-use thing that you take and you use it and you pollute it and you throw it away as waste. Now the reality is water is not a stock. Water, in fact, is a flux. It moves in time and space, and it can be infinitely recycled. So earlier on, you mentioned the Emfuleni case. Yeah. Now, and in the case of Emfuleni, what's happening there is you get raw sewage, vast quantities of raw sewage entering the rivers because of a breakdown of infrastructure. The very same drinking water that provides Gauteng, I might add, okay? But that while we're seeing that as a problem at the moment, it's also an opportunity. Because we can start investing into infrastructure at the 825 water works across the country and converting those wastewater works into water recovery plant. Now, immediately people start shuddering when they're thinking about recovering water from sewage, but it doesn't have to become drinking water. Mm. That water recovered from waste can, in fact, become a water for industrial process purposes. For example, in Emfuleni, where you've got big industries that need water, they don't need to drink or they don't need to have potable quality water. Mm. It gets more interesting as you get into the engineering discussion of this thing now. There's been a very fascinating study that's been done, a proof of concept that's been running out in Durban for the last period of time. And what they've done there is they've taken treated sewage effluent, which is discharged to the environment at a safe standard, and they've mixed that with seawater, and they've put it through a seawater desalination plant. And what that has now done is it's changed the economics of desalination. And by changing the economics of desalination, it suddenly made desalination financially viable because the cost of that desalinated water, at least for the coastal cities, is now come down to the same cost per unit of water as the water you get out of a river. So in other words, this is once again a good news story, and those kind of things will be taken on board by the independent water producers, because in Gauteng, of course, you've got the problem of sewage, and you've also got the problem of acid mine water, but both of those are in fact substantial resources that can be treated. In fact, they have to be treated because if we don't treat them, they simply destroy the rivers.
Absolutely. So, in fact, you talk about acid mine water, Prof, it makes me think of, you know, the exorbitant amount of money the state has had to spend dealing with acid mine drainage in the, you know, abandoned old workings in the mines, where there's great fear that it might actually contaminate water tables, particularly here in Gauteng, in the old Witwatersrand Basin. Prof, I'm just going to ask to take a short break because I'm interested in continuing with this conversation part as well, that you are raising new technologies, new developments. You're talking about proof of concepts that are being tried out in areas like eThekwini, and the role that would be of independent water producers, and whether or not that may amount to a form of water privatization. We'll talk about all of those things after this short break, and I call on you, people of power, to call in on 0861 987 000. Water maintenance and infrastructure is up for the talking this morning.
Tackling the challenges of our time, one conversation at a time. Power 98.7. Now we're talking.
Indeed, we are talking. Professor at the Center for Environmental Management at the University of the Free State, Professor Anthony Turton, is my guest this morning, talking all things about water. And Prof, you were just alluding to some of, you know, the new things that are being done to help us manage, you know, our water systems better, but also other issues. Talking about acid mine water, and I was saying, you know, there's acid mine drainage, and we do need solutions to this. We do need to recycle as well, some of that sewer, as some countries do. I mean, they generate energy from it and do all other fascinating things. But as we have these conversations, Prof, how do we make sure that this does not gravitate towards, you know, a massive privatization of water, which, of course, in the 90s, there was once a tango in Bolivia with the World Bank and so on, which led to massive public protests because it led to a higher cost for water, for the users, at least, or consumers of the water. How do we make sure that we continue to strike a balance in terms of maintaining the affordability of that water?
Well, I think that's a very valid question, and the answer to that is quite simple. We need an independent water regulator that has not got vested interest on either side of the equation. So their role must be to regulate the costing and the provision of water services. But you must also remember that if people have got a culture of non-payment for services, then it's difficult to maintain the infrastructure. You know, it costs a huge amount of money to maintain the services. So while water itself hasn't got any commercial value, this is a false representation of water, because without water, you cannot have any economic activity or any social development either. So people must pay for their water services, and the regulator must determine that it's correct, correctly priced. But there's another very important aspect that we need to understand now. Our infrastructure is generally in an appalling condition. I think that is take that as given. Okay, so that's on the one hand. We need to invest heavily into our infrastructure to upgrade. On the other hand, we also know that the fiscus right now is unable to fund any of those projects. The fiscus has pretty much been bled dry, and with the increasing foreign debt that the fiscus has to service now, we can reasonably accept that there's going to be less and less money coming available in the future to fund this infrastructure. So that takes us to a rock and a hard place situation now. And this is where the Business Water Chamber is now working very closely with the Treasury and with other key stakeholders like the Presidency, etc., as part of an initiative driven by the private sector. And what is happening there now is that special purpose vehicles are going to be rolled out. And these special purpose vehicles are going to enable private capital to come into the market. But that does not mean that the services will be privatized. What it means, I have to get into some technical detail now, because right now, Municipal Financial Management Act has got certain weaknesses in the act. And there are just two weaknesses that I will highlight now, which have to be solved. The first weakness is that no executive decision maker is ever held legally accountable for mismanagement. So if you are an executive, the mayor, for example, and you steal a couple of million rand, the Municipal Financial Management Act does not hold you criminally liable for that. That is a weakness that we have to overcome. Mm. The second weakness in the Municipal Financial Management Act is that when each ratepayer or taxpayer pays their levies to the municipality, that is paid as a bulk sum. Let's just say you pay 1,000 rand levies, and let's just say of those 1,000 rand, 100 rand is for your water services. That 100 rand is not ring-fenced in a bank account within the municipality. So there's nothing stopping that mayor from taking that 100 rand of your water levies to go and upgrading his house or buying a new motor car for himself. So the ring fencing of financing and the fiduciary responsibility of your executives is missing in the Municipal Financial Management Act. And that has been solved by very clever legal and financial people now through what is known as a special purpose vehicle, which is being approved as we speak now by Treasury and by the various arms of government. And what the special purpose vehicle does is it enables the commercial law, you know, the Companies Act to come into play. And that does two things. Firstly, it enables the ring fencing of the money in that special purpose vehicle. And secondly, it holds the executives criminally liable if they steal any money. So these are two very important things. So now your special purpose vehicles are going to become your independent water producers. And let's just give an example now.
Yeah.
Let's just take one of the wastewater works in Imfuleni.
Yes.
That currently discharges 120 million litres of raw sewage every day into the river. That can become a special purpose vehicle whereby an offtake agreement is entered into between the special purpose vehicle and the municipality, whereby they will accept that treated water back into the system for onward selling to their commercial users, the big factories, etc. And it's the asset that is accrued from that contract, from that offtake agreement. That becomes the asset that gives the special purpose vehicle value. And based on that, now you get private capital coming in, but selling the water at a regulated rate. So it's not the privatization of water.
Yes.
But it's ring-fenced the whole management process. It's brought in the Companies Act, which now holds the executive decision makers criminally liable if they mismanage it. And it's also enabled the building of skills and the building of capacity within municipalities.
And of course, Prof, I mean, the skeptic might ask and say, this private capital, how would it make back its gains?
Well, you must remember that private capital is like water. It flows somewhere, okay? And private capital comes in different categories.
Yes.
So the one of the categories of private capital is what is known as the bond market, and this is exactly how Rand Water raises its capital.
Mm.
If Rand Water needs to fund an upgrade, it goes to the international bond market,
yeah,
which is private money. It's private money that comes in to fund Rand Water as it does at the moment. And your bond market does not require a very high return, but it requires a secure return, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that's why your Rand Water would also have to be rated by the various credit rating agencies so that, you know, its bonds are also attractive. Prof, I've got Stuart quickly on the line before we run out of time. Stuart, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Malik?
Well, go ahead, please.
Great, thanks. You know, I'm listening, and it's weird how we have adults in positions in government who fail to fathom and understand that anything in life, it needs to be serviced. Now, with all the complexities that have been discussed with this water saga and all the parties involved, common sense should prevail that a lot of probably the pipelines and machineries and everything that's been used, we acquired them a long time ago, you know, before 94. But we still have adults who will not service what needs to be serviced, and they worsen it by doing what? Corruption, whereby money that needs to be utilized for these things, it's never available.
Yeah. Stuart, I want to give Prof a chance to respond, but I think your point is well made, Prof. From Eskom to water to roads and potholes, it is all about maintenance. How do we just make sure that in a minute, Prof, how do we just make sure that we have foolproof maintenance for our infrastructure?
That is an absolutely perfect question, and we deserve a good answer for that question. The problem right now is that the people in authority convert a problem into an opportunity. Loot. They do not understand that we must repair those things properly at the lowest possible price, but in a reliable way. So the right now the mindset is to convert the problem into an opportunity to self-enrich. This is what we must stop. This is where the independent water regulator would come in. This is where criminal sanction needs to be applied for executives who loot and steal and who fail to meet their fiduciary responsibility.
Absolutely. Prof Tetton, thank you so much for your time and patience.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. That's Professor Anthony Tetton, Professor at Center for Environmental Management, all the way there in the University of the Free State. The prof seems to suggest maintenance is the victim yamasela because people don't maintain things. But that's the problem. Mine's the opportunity. Oh, Safamadot.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.